Welcome to Kill Chain, a platform cybersecurity and technology podcast presented by Fleet Defender. My name is Marcus Q, and I'm here with Terry Reiner.
Hello, everybody.
Terry is our offensive cyber warfare expert and CEO of Fleet Defender, here today to talk to us about hacking cars through headlights, which is pretty exciting.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get to that, though, want to cover a few Fleet Defender announcements. So Terry will actually be featured on the In the Nick of Time podcast on May 9th at 1 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun one. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be great. Do you want to give us a little background on In the Nick of Time and what that's going to be all about?
Yeah, the host, Nick, he was actually the very first, I believe, chief software officer for the United States Air Force and Space Force. So he was working, you know, directly, you know, in the government space, did a lot with introducing, you know, agile technologies, DevOps, just all kinds of like revolutionizing how the Air Force and the Space Force writes and develops software. Yeah, it's going to be really, really interesting.
That's great. And can we talk about his Get Sage project that he's been working on as well?
Ask Sage.
Ask Sage.
Yeah. So Ask Sage, I mean, everybody's probably heard about ChatGPT, GPT-4, you know, all the OpenAI stuff that's going on right now. So Ask Sage leverages some of that technology, but in the government space. So if I remember correctly, they can actually ingest controlled unclassified information, or CUI, and other, you know, government specific documents that the public doesn't have access to. And so government teams can now use that technology as part of their role, you know, having trained the models on the information that they process and deal with. So it's supposed to like accelerate everything from like developing your risk management framework package to just everything. Right. So it's pretty cool project.
Yeah, that is a really cool. Is that a public sector project or a private sector project?
I believe Ask Sage is a private company, but obviously serving the public market, the government.
That's really cool. I mean, in an area that you want things to go as quickly as possible as far as defense, right, is being able to speed that up using AI. And that's awesome. That's the future.
Right. It really is. And it's actually a little scary because you have a lot of people right now talking about how AI is super dangerous and how we need to slow down and how we need to regulate and be very careful. And there's even been calls to stop all AI projects in the United States. The problem is the second you do that, our adversaries get even further ahead because they're not going to stop.
Right.
And so I think it's kind of short-sighted to have this idea of we should stop all AI development and research until we figure out how to do it safely or how to do it diligently or whatever. You know, we do need to keep pressing forward. Is there dangers that we need to be concerned about? Of course. And we need to research that. We need to understand it better. But do we stop to figure it out? No, you can't stop.
Right. You just keep, we got to keep moving forward. I mean, I know, what do they call America? Like the great experiment, or the, you know, our biggest export is creativity and innovation. And it's like, we have to keep that going and keep that going forward without putting reins on it. Cause it's our most powerful, you know, tool.
It really is. And, you know, adversaries have been catching up. Like, you know, some of the adversaries like China, for example, like they've gotten really smart about like education and how to wrap that education into research and development and scientific progress and pushing that. And they leverage all of that as part of their military and their expansion strategy. And so if we stop and they continue, they will immediately get another edge on us. And that's just bad. That's bad for everybody.
Yeah. So today we're going to be talking about stealing a car via a headlight. And this actually happened to a cybersecurity researcher, which, of course, of anybody to get their car stolen through this new kind of can injection hack, it was a cybersecurity researcher.
Yeah. Talk about the odds, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if his actually was stolen through the headlight or if it was the they had one where they used, a Dremel tool to cut a hole in the trunk lid to get access to the CAN bus harness that was in the trunk lid.
Wow.
So I can't remember if this specific one was the headlight or that one, but since one of them came out, we've seen quite a few following kind of the same method, right? Like this CAN injection attack to steal the car.
So the two researchers behind this are Ken Tindall and Ian Tabor. And so we're kind of talking about around the news articles that came out about this, but ultimately what this was somebody was able to manipulate or bypass through the headlight to access the CAN bus, or what you're talking about, Dremeling through the trunk to access the CAN bus.
Right. All you need is access to the CAN bus, mm-hmm. right? So it doesn't matter which wiring harness you use. Like there was another one that a hack with BMW where there was something in the side view mirror. And all you had to do is get close enough to inject a signal into that and they could unlock the doors and bypass security and steal the car.
So you didn't even have to get inside the car in any way. It was all exterior.
Yeah, that one was exterior. You know, and there's been other cases too, like even dating back to like early, like 2010, 2011, 2012, we were advising some of the OEMs, especially in Europe, that they developed these smart trailers. Because if you've been to Europe, not like a lot of people have trucks. A lot of people just drive sedans. And so like Mercedes, for example, they had a smart trailer and the smart trailer ran on CAN. And so they actually had the body CAN network pins for CAN at the trailer receptacle there at the back of the vehicle exposed to the world. And the body CAN is also where they had things like door locks and window controls and things like that. So just walking up to the car and plugging into it, you could do all sorts of crazy things.
Yeah. And I think it's going to be best for us, and I don't want to dive too deep into the history of CAN or where it comes from, but just to give a high-level overview of, you know, what is a CAN bus?
Yeah, so CAN, it's a controller area network. So it was developed by Bosch, I believe, early 80s. And there is regulation in pretty much every country across the globe that regulates that all diagnostics in vehicles are done over CAN to kind of standardize diagnostics. So you've heard of like onboard diagnostics or OBD, OBD2, you know, the little port that's underneath your dashboard. Now it's even further into like UDS, like Unified Diagnostic System and stuff, like all of that runs on CAN and it's regulated too. And so vehicle manufacturers have adopted CAN and they use it pretty much, you know, across everything. And now there's some emerging ones like FlexRay and Automotive Ethernet and other things, but regulation still dictates that they use CAN for certain things within the vehicle. So it's not going away anytime soon.
And physically, CAN is really just two wires, right? It's a CAN high and a CAN low.
It's a twisted pair is what they call it. Like in the engineering world, it's a twisted pair. So you got a high and a low, which means it's a differential signal. And so conceivably, like if you see a positive like 3.3 volts on the high line, you should see a negative 3.3 volts on the low line, you know, because it's differential and it mirrors. And they do that for noise, like for like assurance. So like you have automotives are what they consider like a harsh environment, very noisy because the alternator puts a lot of electrical noise into the system and everything else. And so you need to make sure your networks are very resilient to outside factors like noise and other things that could degrade signals. And so CAN, differential bus, differential signaling, increases the robustness of the bus. So that way there's a higher level of assurance in the system.
Yeah. And really CAN's main reason for being is to connect different ECUs. Is that right? Being electronic control units within the car?
Yep. It connects all the different nodes. And there's usually, you know, back in the day, there's like one or two CAN buses. Now there's, you know, we've seen everything from like four or five standard to some manufacturers, like especially in the trucking space, they actually have dedicated CAN buses for specific ECUs, which wasn't really the purpose of CAN. Like it was meant to be a multi-node network, but that's just how they decided to implement it. So it's kind of proliferated and there's many CAN buses. But like, for example, we were talking about like the Mercedes and the body CAN and all that. Like you would have all your door locks, window controls, smart trailer, different things connected to the body CAN. You'd have an engine CAN where anything related to the engine or the powertrain would be on the engine CAN. You have like the infotainment. So like radio, GPS, you know, all those different things would be sitting on the infotainment CAN. So they kind of segregate out these networks like that.
And so as we're going to get into talking about this specific, exploit that these thieves use to steal the car, what we're really talking about is they're gaining access to that twisted pair. Is that right?
Yeah, to the network. Yep, that's on the twisted pair, right? So you can do that through a connector. You can probe, like you can use like a very, very sharp needle and stick it into the wire itself to actually connect to it. There's a lot of different ways to do it. But yeah, they get physical access into that twisted pair wire that's on one of the, that makes up part of the CAN bus.
And so let's explore that a little. So like you just mentioned, and CAN injection is really the exploit that we're talking about. It's a hack that was used to steal this car. It sounds like it's similar to like a classic message replay where they could, you know, ping the key fob in your car inside your home, take that signal and then ping that back to the car and unlock it. It sounds similar to that. Is that right? Or is that no?
No, it's very similar to that. It's different, but the analogy kind of holds, right? The way that, you know, back in the day, so you're talking 10, you know, years ago, you just gain access to CAN bus and you can send whatever you want and do whatever you want. Like there's really no security on it. But now they actually do have some security built into some of these ECUs. So it does like handshakes and validating and stuff. So like this new attack that these researchers found and published, the way I understand it is like they're actually spoofing signals on the bus to turn off security features, right? Like if your key is not present, then the ignition is inhibited. So you can't start the car, right? It makes sense. Your key's not in the car, can't start the car. Makes sense. So there's an ECU that communicates with your key fob. And then once your key fob and that ECU do their little wireless handshake and it validates like this is the right key for the car, then that security ECU will then send messages on the CAN bus that say, hey, the key is present. It's the right person. You can go ahead and start. And so what I think these researchers are doing is like, or the thieves are doing is once they get access to the CAN bus, they're sending messages as if they are that security ECU saying, hey, the key is present. You're good to start, which you're not. The key's not actually there, but the rest of the car doesn't know that, because they're spoofing it and the trusted individual being the security ECU is saying, hey, we're good, but it's not that security ECU. That's the thieves' device that they have in their hand.
And that's where, you know, on a positive note, like security is getting better, right? They're having to go further. They're having to do more things to get access to these things. They're having to take down security measures, but it also highlights something that we've talked about a lot, especially in technology and in cybersecurity, is that attackers will always find a way around it.
There is. It's a cat and mouse game.
It's like, a constant.
Yep. I mean, even back in the early days of exploitation, right? Like there was buffer overflows. We could exploit buffer overflows again, you know, remote access to different systems or execution control over systems. And so, you know, like Windows and Microsoft, they rolled out, you know, DEP. It was one of their protections. And then so find a way around that. So then they roll out like ASLR, you know, address space randomized layout or whatever it stands for, you know? And so like it would start randomizing memory locations of things when it loads. And so that way you couldn't just easily jump somewhere and start executing code. Well, we find a way around that. And you know, it's just like code signing, find a way around that. Like
it's so
just
cat and mouse.
It's so a cat and mouse game all day.
And so when we talk about specifically this exploit and this hack, stealing the car, you know, in the article, they talk about going through the headlight. And so how is it that going through the headlight and injecting code into the CAN bus through the headlight can affect that security ECU? Is that because they're all interconnected or, you know, how that's what I'm just trying to wrap my head around, right?
Yeah, there's a couple different ways. Like if the vehicle is architected to where you can send a signal through the headlight and that headlight happens to have, or the CAN bus that they're accessing there at the headlight, is the one that the security ECU is connected to. Well, then you're just on the CAN bus, but here's the catch, you know, when you segregate out the CAN buses, so you have like engine stuff on one, infotainment on one, body, you know, stuff on another one, powertrain, you know, you got them all separated, like, you know, good security architecture. You have the gateway that relays messages across the networks as needed. Well, when you're injecting a valid signal on a CAN bus, how does that gateway know it's invalid? It doesn't. Like, so it's just going to, it's going to do its job. It's going to forward it over to the other bus that it needs to get to, and it's going to go on its merry way. Like it's doing exactly what it was programmed to do. And so, you know, this is a really interesting attack because like it really does defeat, you know, a lot of the security mechanisms, by a lot, I mean all security mechanisms that have been put in place by the OEM to protect against potential cybersecurity incidents.
Yeah, I know in the article, the cybersecurity researcher, I think even in the comments, talks about like really cryptography is maybe the only way to prevent this, is the signal that they inject is being able to essentially make that not have the right codes to get bypass.
Right. I mean, and then you just crack the codes, right? Like, cat and mouse. I mean, he's not wrong. And it would effectively help right now because, like, you could even roll that out to existing vehicles. Now, there's different things you got to worry about. And that is, you know, the overhead of encryption I mean, some of the ECUs are getting better. Like they can afford the overhead of doing some encryption. But maybe if you're talking about just encryption of the security signal by itself, then maybe that works. But then you do the same thing that we've done before. You just crack open the ECU, reverse engineer the hardware, you know, on and on. Like, so if you don't implement the cryptography right and we can steal the keys, or we can at least understand the algorithm enough to make fake keys, then, you know, it's just a cat and mouse, right? And so like it might work for a short time, but what's really needed is kind of rethinking the entire game. And what's going to hold us back from doing some of that is regulation, right? Like you are required to use the CAN bus in all its glory and all its flaws. And so, you know, we can keep trying to layer security and security and security. And one of the things that, like, you know, Ken and Ian are talking about is another layer that's probably needed. It's probably needed right now. But is it the end all be all? No, it's not. Like getting away from CAN bus is the right answer, right? Like moving to a more secure mechanism, like completely rethinking how vehicles are architected and built, like that is going to help. But then there's probably going to be flaws in that too.
Sure.
We're humans, right? Like we develop flawed systems. We're not perfect. So
yeah, it's interesting too, because it highlights a conversation that we've had and actually you spoke about on the stage at Manifest, which was, you know, what it used to take to steal a car was you would just break in and unlock it and sometimes use a screwdriver, start the car and drive away.
The good old days of Slim Jim.
Right. And so we made things more advanced. We made things more technical. We put immobilizers in. Well, thieves are getting more advanced too, right? I mean, I think I saw the picture in the article of the device they used. It's hidden inside of like a JBL speaker, and it's something you can just buy online.
Yeah, thieves are getting more technology advanced. Like it is the cat and mouse, right? But, you know, another interesting thing is as technology evolves, the barrier for entry also decreases, right? Like, so, you know, 15 years ago, hacking cars and trucks and all that stuff was nation state level work. Like you had to have a lot of manpower, took a lot of time to do reverse engineering, vulnerability research, crafting the exploits. It was like highly, highly tailored. And now like the vehicle industry is standardizing on certain operating systems. They're, you know, certain technologies, but even the technologies used by attackers has also increased. And so it lowers the bar for entry. And, you know, everybody's talking about, like we were talking about, generative AI, like ChatGPT and stuff. And they're saying like, well, this is going to lower the bar even further for people generating attacks. And well, that could be true. I can see how it could be leveraged in order to at least accelerate the process of going from, you know, target identification to, you know, fielded capability. And so it's a crazy world where, you know, we're always going to be in this cat and mouse, which, you know, always goes back to like a defender's job is never done. And you can't have enough security. I mean, as long as it's not impeding operation, I mean, obviously, but you know, you have to have that defense in depth. You got to layer your security models and have different protections at different layers. Cryptography is like what Ken and Ian are talking about. Like that's just one of them, you know, but you still got to have detection. You still got to have monitoring. You still got to have gateways. You still got to have firewalls. You know, it's just another tool in the toolbox to slow them down.
And, you know, bringing this back to fleets, because we're fleet cybersecurity podcast here, is we're talking about passenger vehicles. That's what the article's about. That's what really this hack is done on, is the headlight through a passenger vehicle. But I can absolutely see how this could be a major issue for fleets, especially with cargo, is, you know, hauling cargo and somebody wants that cargo. Well, now they can steal the truck by accessing the CAN bus. And I'm sure they could steal it other ways too. But, you know, this is another vulnerability in logistics.
Right. It is. And, you know, just as the technology, you know, in the trucks grows, which I mean, they're just like vehicles, right? Like there's tons of ECUs, like they are just a bunch of network computers together. They're getting really, really smart. And it's great because it's great technology. It helps reduce, you know, environmental impacts. It helps increase optimization. So there's lots of good reasons for it. But, you know, there are parts of the world that we've talked to some of our partners in, you know, the Central and South America where like they're not even thinking about cybersecurity right now because there are still people literally forcing a truck to the side of the road and, you know, holding a shotgun to the driver's head. You know, you don't,
yeah.
You know, they're not stealing the truck using the CAN bus in that regards. But there are, you know, other places where other, you know, certain adversaries are involved where these things are occurring.
Yeah. And kind of even on that level of talking about adversarial attacks and getting in the network, Could this be something where they're able to access the CAN bus, send these messages to the ECU? Could they use that to plant malware for a future attack, where this is a pretty quick instant gratification of stealing a vehicle, but could this also be something that they use to plant something in there for, say, a ransom attack later on, or a DDoS attack to shut down an entire fleet if they could get access?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when you have physical access and you're actually able to send messages onto the CAN bus, I mean, that is kind of the keys of the kingdom, right? So if you roll your vehicle into your OEM's, you know, service center, and they're going to update all the software in your ECUs, like, that's mostly occurring over CAN. Now, there in some instances, like, I believe, like, some of the higher end European cars, they actually set up the software update over CAN, but then the actual transfer of the file is done over automotive Ethernet, you know, or FlexRay, in order to, you know, because it's a much higher bandwidth and you can do it a lot faster. But still, a lot of stuff, a lot of manufacturers are still doing ECU firmware updates over CAN bus. And so, like, if you get access to the CAN bus, now it takes a little bit more work, right? Like, you can't just walk down to a car down the street and just do it, right? Like, you have to understand what the handshake is, like, how is the firmware update mechanism and the security of that mechanism. Like, we've seen everything from, like, very simple 2-byte handshakes to, like, actual, like, real encryption. And so you got to understand that piece. But, you know, if you are a sophisticated attacker that knows about this, you can figure it out. Like, it's been done.
And what we talked about with barrier to entry, you know, people need to be sophisticated, understand all these systems. But it's interesting that they're able to put them onto tools that then most people can use. And that's kind of a scary thought, is that they're able to do that. But, you know, taking this back to a more reassuring place, because, you know, we talk about some of the cybersecurity risks in the world, but really there are some incredible researchers, like the researchers who found this and submitted, I believe they even submitted it to Toyota, right?
I'm not sure. I do know that they did get issued a CVE. So that's kind of like when you discover a vulnerability, you know, submit it in, you get a CVE, and then it's kind of published that way everybody else. And then, you know, through what they call responsible disclosure, a lot of times before a CVE gets published, like, you do let the manufacturer, whoever wrote the software or whatever, you know, the system, know about it. So that way they have time to fix it. And so, like, I'm sure they probably, you know, went through reasonable disclosure. And but, you know, fixing something like that is a very difficult thing to do. You don't just roll out a software update, you know, for something like that. Like, that's a difficult one. You almost have to re-engineer your vehicle security.
Yeah. And hopefully they will. I mean, that's kind of how we get better, right? Is you have to find the flaws and then uncover them and be truthful enough to yourself, really, as a company too, and go, you know what? We need to redo this. We need to make this better.
Right. And you know, and it's really interesting too, because there's other layers of defense that, like, for example, the Fleet Defender product, you know, cybersecurity ECU is doing intrusion detection monitoring and all that stuff. We need to make sure that, like, what we're doing detects attacks like that, similar attacks or completely different attacks, right? And so that's why, you know, at Fleet Defender, we've got our offensive unit that's constantly generating and researching offensive techniques and trying to attack vehicles in completely new ways, just to make sure that our own defensive technology picks it up. So once attackers get to that stage, you know, we're already ahead of them. And so, like, it goes back to, like, the old adage, I believe it was, like, the United States Air Force's Strategic Command. Like, their whole saying was, like, a good defense is the best offense, or something like that, right? Like, and so we really take that to heart. So our offensive unit is constantly attacking, generating new attacks, finding new ways, and staying on top of all that, just to make sure the defensive side keeps up or stays ahead of where everyone else is at.
Yeah. And that's, again, just a positive note. You know, I think you see OEMs taking notice. You know, we talk with a lot of large commercial fleets and they seem to understand it. They get that this is a problem. They get that it's a threat and that they need, you know, a system like ours, which is why we're talking to them in the first place. But, you know, with large commercial fleets and with, you know, news and publications about this stuff is where you see OEM action, right? As they start to get involved, they understand that they need to make a change to it. And that's how things get better. So I think ultimately this will lead to better cybersecurity outcomes for vehicles.
Right, exactly. If we were keeping all this stuff secret and, like, we weren't talking about it and we weren't out there doing it, then the problems would just continue to persist. And then, you know, you don't really know who's out there doing it. where it gets leaked on, you know, like the dark web or something, right? Like you said, like someone generates an attack, sells it to somebody on the dark web, because I mean, this stuff is worth a lot of money. I mean, imagine if you have a novel way of stealing a car, what criminal syndicate out there would not want to buy that? Because they can go steal as many cars as they can, take them back to the chop shop, whatever, you know, sell them off for parts, make a ton of money on it. So like, it's really, really valuable to have these kinds of, you know, this research into the attacks if you were, you know, devious and wanted to sell it. So yeah, it is very valuable. And a lot of the larger carriers, like they have very robust cybersecurity teams in place. And so like when we go out and talk to them, they get it. They get it right away. And it's not new to them because they've been concerned about it. It's been in their threat matrix or their risk matrix for a while, and they've been thinking about it. But, you know, smaller carriers and, you know, owner operators, like until, you know, the Russian mob is out there ransomwaring every single semi truck on the road and it's just like all over the place, they don't, it's not brought up to their level of awareness to say, hey, this is something we should be thinking about right now.
Sure.
And so, and that is kind of a disadvantage to being a smaller carrier. Like you don't have all these cybersecurity experts sitting around thinking about how to mitigate risk and how to do this kind of stuff. And you're kind of waiting for even the government to even push out regulations that say, no, now you have to do this, or OEMs, you have to do this. And the margins are so small in trucking anyway. And you're constantly just trying to find ways to optimize your process. Like, is it something I need to buy right now or is it not? You know, there's a lot that goes into that conversation.
Yeah. And if you're ever looking to have that conversation, you know, I know our team is always open and willing to talk about that stuff. You know, whether it's about the Fleet Defender product or just about, you know, what a small fleet can do to better protect its vehicles and systems, you know, we're always open to that conversation. So check us out, fleetdefender.com, and hit us up on our contact page if you ever want to talk about that stuff.
Right. And that's true across like all domains of being safer, right? So we've got products rolling out for cybersecurity. We've got products rolling out for driver safety. We've got products rolling out for predictive maintenance. So yeah, across the board, happy to have the conversation to see how we can help.
Yeah. And again, we're always open to have that conversation. So give us a look at fleetdefender.com and hit us up on our contact page. Otherwise, Terry, thank you for joining today.
Yeah, thank you. And until next time,
Keep
on trucking.